The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
John Gibbons, I know in a moment you want to, what you say, bust some of what you regard as the myths and misconceptions around electric vehicles. But before we get to that, I want to talk to you about this new government report, which apparently involved over 12,000 people and an online public consultation amongst 4,000 members of the public, which found, amongst other things, that a sense of urgency and understanding of individual impacts remains a challenge when it comes to people taking climate action, which highlights barriers people face in taking individual action. But here are some of the things in it as well. There's an almost universal belief that climate change is happening. 96% of the Irish public saying this, which I'm sure you're delighted to hear. About 51% hear about climate change weekly. They must all be listeners to The Last Word. But here's some of the stuff that I say might get you a little bit irked. 12% believe that there's uncertainty among scientists about why climate change is happening. And also a third believe that climate change is caused equally by nature and by humans.
Yeah, good evening, Matt. Yeah, that's... We'll start with that one. I think I've seen lots of these studies come and go. The EPA, for example, did the climate change in the Irish mines study. Again, found very high levels of public awareness, very high levels of public concern. But it sort of addresses that issue that everybody wants change, Matt, but nobody wants to change. That's what we're seeing loud and clear in this.
They want somebody else to do the
change. Oh, absolutely. We're all prepared to let the other guy do the heavy lifting on this. And as you go through the survey, certainly the one that alarmed me a little bit is to think that one in three people incorrectly believe that climate change is equally caused by nature and humans. That's just plain wrong, right? That means that a third...
People don't like to be told that they're wrong, John.
Sure, but, you know, that's the way it goes, Matt. Unfortunately, when you're wrong about a scientific fact, it's much better to just get your head around that, move on, and so on. Carrying wrong impressions around with us is a really bad idea. It leads to very bad outcomes. So I think we should take sort of things that are simply incorrect. We take them on the nose, we deal with them, and then we move on. And it is concerning that that means basically what? 1.5 million, maybe 1.7 million Irish people believe that climate change, well, it's happening, sure, but it could be natural, it could be human. That is massive. And that, I would suggest, it represents a huge failure, a huge communications failure. And I'll start here with ourselves in the media. We have failed. If at this stage, Matt, one third of the population still don't get this.
Okay, some of the things that came up. Reducing meat consumption apparently is a barrier for many, particularly men. Because people stating that reducing meat intake would not have a sufficient impact on climate change and that demand would continue to grow elsewhere. So in other words, why demand ourselves or deny ourselves our lovely steaks when if we don't eat them, somebody in China will eat them instead?
Probably because the steaks are high, if you'll pardon the phrase. I think it is absolutely critical that people in a high emissions country like Ireland, and bear in mind, we're within the European Union is among the highest emitting trade bloc in the world, and Ireland per capita are the second highest carbon polluters in the European Union. So this idea that it's somebody else's job to cut their emissions, Matt, is just crazy. And I think on the meat consumption thing, it's really interesting because, and as you said, it's particularly a male thing. I think we have been told this over and over again particularly by meat industry interests that, oh, if we don't do it, they'll do it somewhere else. That's not, that is a morally bogus argument.
Why is it morally bogus? Maybe it's an accurate assumption to make as to consumption, particularly in parts of the world where they have not had the diets because of income previously. They want more protein and they want the protein from beef, and that's increasing as population grows in China, India, places like that. That while we deny ourselves our ribeye steaks, yes, there will be more of them eaten elsewhere.
Sure. And do you think that justifies, for example, the Irish state spending millions of taxpayers' money going to the Far East to try to market them to eat more meat? This isn't happening in a vacuum. This has actively been driven by countries like Ireland because that's what we want to do, right? So we have two concerns that we have to deal with ourselves, Matt. Number one, we overconsume meat in this country per capita. We eat more meat than is healthy. And this is the thing. If we simply reduced meat consumption to what are World Health Organization levels of health, that alone would have a big reduction in carbon emissions within Ireland. So we overconsume meat. And I'm not surprised because, of course, meat is over-marketed to us, often by state agencies telling us, eat more delicious meat, yum, yum, right? Despite the fact that meat to excess is a huge health risk. And number two, it is the most intense form of carbon emissions from the food system.
Okay, let's move on to something else, because the report also highlights what it regards as a reluctance, particularly amongst younger people, to fly less. The report states that living on an island is part of this, as well as the idea of taking numerous flights annually with shorter durations becoming the norm among younger people. So some report that they would only fly less if they were forced to, and across climate action workshops, individuals, quote, didn't routinely make the connection between the numerous holidays they'd booked abroad and the damage to the climate.
Yeah, I guess this what this drives to the heart of is that we are social creatures, right? We take our signals, Matt, from the people around us and what they're doing. So if we see, for example, you know, the high rollers, the Taylor Swifts and so on, rocking into Dublin on their private jets, we're taking our message from them. These are the people we look up to. These are the people who, you know, get featured in the media. These are the people who are our icons. Now, if they're behaving like that, well, then surely all must be well. So the signal that we're getting, for example, and if you want to go online and buy a flight to somewhere for 30 or 40 quid, that message therefore is that not only is it okay to do that, but in fact the social signals that you're getting from both commercially through the pricing and also from people that we look up to, if you like, is that this is fine and there isn't a crisis. And I would say, Matt, as an overall observation, what comes across loud and clear from this study is that the penny has not dropped. The penny is stuck in the chute on the climate emergency in Ireland. We understand it with our heads. We understand it at some kind of intellectual level, but we have no idea that this represents a threat to our own lives and particularly to the lives of our children and everybody that we care about.
Okay.
That message hasn't sunk in Ireland.
Okay, one more from the report. Living car-free and installing heat pumps were among the climate actions people were most likely to say they have no plans to do.
Yeah, again, that's a communication issue. The heat pump thing as well, and we've spoken about this before, and that's a step that I've taken some time ago, and therefore I'm aware of how it works. There's a huge amount of misinformation circulating, for example, around heat pumps. Great amount of misinformation. And this is what we're seeing, that positive climate actions now are being met by a backlash. And as we're probably about to talk about shortly, that backlash isn't being dreamed up. This has been engineered. So a lot of the blowback, a lot of the pushback that is coming against pro-climate action is being engineered, Matt. It's not happening by accident.
Okay, well, let's talk about electric vehicles. And you say there are myths and misconceptions about them. The first one you want to deal with is that electric vehicles have little or no CO2 advantage over the car you already drive.
Yeah, this is something you commonly hear that says, oh, sure, I might as well keep my old jalopy rather than taking the hit and all that carbon involved in buying a new car.
Manufacturing
a new car. And again, studies have been done that have looked at this in detail.
So I have interviewed Green Party representatives who've actually agreed with that. Senator Roisin Garvey said that basically a 20-year-old car, which he continues to drive, if I remember correctly, is better than going out and buying a new car in new EV.
If you can make that transition, if you're in a position to phase out that old car and move across. And let me just explain the numbers, because there's lots of people, by the way, on all sides of the argument that are not that clear about the science behind this. So if you, for example, buy a new EV, right, the first thing is it has a higher carbon hit than buying a new regular car, right? So that's a given. However, if you keep that car for a typical length, Matt, of a car, which is 14 years, that's the typical life of an internal combustion engine or an EV. Over that 14 years, between the manufacturer of the car and the stuff that comes out your tailpipe, your typical internal combustion car will account for 45 tonnes of carbon dioxide over its life. The same EV, over the same 14 years, 14 tonnes. So it's basically one third of the carbon impact over its lifetime. So it is a massive, massive difference. And I would say that this penny, again, hasn't been fully grasped, even in some green circles, at just what a massive difference the move to EVs actually makes in terms of carbon emissions. A typical car, Matt, emits more than its own weight in carbon dioxide every single year. And that's where the real damage is happening.
Okay. EVs simply displace carbon emissions from roads to distant power stations.
Yeah, this is one you often see the cartoon that sort of shows the smoggy EV driver going past and he's got a cable coming out the back of the car that's connected to a power station. So the idea being, oh, well, yeah, sure, you've cleaned up your car, but you're simply displacing energy that's been produced somewhere else. And obviously, at one level, there's a certain truth to that. But the fact is that it's vastly more efficient to convert any form of energy. And by the way, the dirtiest form of energy on any grid in the world would be coal. And even if you were powering your EV from a 100% coal-fired grid, it would be still far more carbon efficient to turn that coal power into electricity to drive your car than to put petrol or diesel into your car. And for example, we see that the what's called the carbon debt of an EV is paid off after about 28,000 kilometres. And basically after that, you're home and hosed.
Okay, why would somebody buy an electric vehicle when they're going to be displaced in turn by synthetic petrol or hydrogen cars?
Yeah, again, the idea that there's this magic synthetic fuels around the corner has been floated. Mostly, by the way, floated by the fossil fuel industry because they're desperate to avoid this transition because the fossil fuel industry has its heart in its mouth because it is absolutely terrified at the prospect of losing millions of barrels of oil in sales a day that go to fuel cars. Now, so therefore, they're coming up with these so-called hybrid solutions. One of them is synthetic fuels or e-fuels. Now, typically, these are often produced, Matt, using electricity. So typically it uses five times more electricity to produce a given unit of synthetic fuel as if you simply use that electricity directly to power the car. Also, we find these synthetic fuels on average are three times more costly than fossil fuels, right? So commercially, there is absolutely no model.
Yeah, but the thing is, and here's another one, this EV fad is over. The numbers of people buying them are dropping dramatically. And one of the main reasons is resale values have collapsed. Why would you buy an EV when you know that in the future being able to sell a second hand is going to be so difficult?
Sure. Again, I can speak to this as somebody who is now on his second EV. So I've been through the process of buying one, selling it, buying another one and so on. And I'll change that one at some stage as well. Okay, let's go through the numbers quickly. First of all, the share of EVs in the Irish market up the first half of this year, 13.6%. It's a little bit down on this time last year. Part of that, it has to do with the slew of misapprehension and anxiety that has arisen around EVs. Some of which, by the way, as I think I said in my opening remarks, has been engineered. There's a definite campaign. We're seeing it through, particularly through the certain brands of media companies that are pushing the idea that EVs are intrinsically flawed. And they're doing it again for a very distinct commercial reason. But I think a reason why there's been an issue with the resale value, ironically, of EVs is that the new prices have been coming down. Tesla, Matt, for example, introduced a €10,000 price cut on their cars to make them more competitive. Now, that had the effect of reducing the resale value of older Teslas. Now, should you be delighted that Teslas are more affordable or horrified that you've lost value on the resale? And I think part of this is the typical churn that happens with new technology. For example, if you buy a new iPhone a year or two later, guess what? The new model comes out and your iPhone is slightly devalued. It's not worth as much as it was. Now, we understand that because you say, okay, well, it's new technology and I move on to the next one. This is really, in a sense, these cars are sort of like computers on wheels. So we're getting the upgrade cycle much more rapidly. So I think the anxiety around resale value is greatly overstated. And the fact is that EVs are now coming quickly towards parity, price parity with regular cars. And that's something we should be celebrating.
Okay, I'm going to leave it there. We will come back to the EVs at a future date. John Gibbons, thank you very much for being with us here on The Last Word of Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.